You forgot the remote. Guess you're watching whatever's on? Or you can call Joint Relief Institute. Fast, safe, FDA-approved pain relief. 708-888-0000.
Bob Bertog's the president of the Bertog Landscape Company, and he joins us most Wednesdays at this time, and it is Wednesday at this time. Hello, Bob Bertog. How are you?
Doing well, John. How are you this week?
Pretty good. All right, Bobby, I'll start with you. What have you got for us this week?
Well, obviously, we had a lot of rain over the weekend, 8 inches in some areas. So if you have standing water, try to do what you can to get rid of it. The other thing that you might want to look into is because of those high winds we had on July 3rd, a lot of branches came out of trees and stuff. And I saw one in my neighborhood. It came out of the tree, and then it turns out the whole thing was decayed on the inside. So don't just think that branches came out because of the wind. Sometimes there's an underlying problem with the tree that you need to look into.
Well, I don't know if it was you or Lou Manfredini. Sometimes Lou goes down this lane. But if a branch comes off of a tree in a windstorm, it's the wind, but it's also maybe not just the wind. It's a sign that that branch or that tree has an issue, right?
Exactly, because the trees themselves are generally pretty pliable. They whip around and they move in unison, but obviously when there's rotation in the air, like a tornado or something, that's a different story. But a normal windstorm, they should be able to withstand, the 25 to 30 mile an hour gusts of wind, no problem.
25, 30, well, yeah, but heck, we had 50, 60 mile an hour winds in some places. So sometimes...
Right, but a lot of the trees really handled it well. Like I'm saying, if you did lose some branches, go up to them and take a close look at the core of it and see if it's hollowed out or if there's bugs.
Oh, yeah.
Just, look for something that might say this is not normal.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I think otherwise we just drag it to the curb or run it through the chipper. But before you do that, see if there's any evidence you got a problem there. I like that.
And exactly.
Then where am I on the course again? We talked about this last week. It's time for step 3 in the fertilizer. Is that right, Bob?
Not quite. You just finished step 2 around Memorial Day, and now you have Labor Day as your next holiday where you want to do your step 3.
Oh, really? I don't do a 4th of July one? I shouldn't be doing one in the middle of summer?
Well, you can. It's not going to hurt anything, but especially if you have an irrigation system. But with all the rain we've had and stuff, I've seen grass that's growing on its own all by itself. But if it's looking a little peaked and a little yellow, go ahead and give it some food. But it's not generally a prescribed feeding for July.
Fair enough. And then I think some of us just get a little anxious. We want to be out there doing something. And if I was going to put down what would be a ballpark general weed killer? I don't want to kill the grass and I don't need to fertilize, but my lawn isn't perfect. I got more crabgrass than I like. There's weeds that pop up here and there. Is there some application just to put down in general right now, Bob?
Well, crabgrass is starting to show its face, and you got to get it early when it's in the early tillers. And that's what they call the growth, the different growth phases of crabgrass. But it's in its early tillers right now, and you want to make sure that you use a herbicide that's labeled for crabgrass because it's a grassy weed. It's not like a dandelion, which is a broadleaf weed. So don't just find like a weed be gone and assume it's going to kill crabgrass. And then the other thing about spraying this time of year, though, it's supposed to be 90 tomorrow. You want to spray if it's over 80 degrees, especially if it's humid too, because that product it's called volatilization. And then what it does is it just kind of hangs above the surface. And then if the wind comes, it takes that herbicide and puts it on plants that you don't want it to be on.
Mm. And if it's a weed and feed product, like a lot of these weed killer products, it seems to me come mixed with something else. Is there just a general kind of weed killer like you're talking about?
Yes, but just at this time of year, I would not do a blanket application because the grass is stressed out already, and now they're talking about 90s again tomorrow. Now you go and put a herbicide on it, even though it's not labeled to kill grass.
Herbicide.
Grass is probably saying, "What the heck? I don't need this."
Really, I might get a text message from my grass going, "What, what the heck are you doing?"
I'm not sure of the relationship you have with your grass, John.
Fair enough. Bob Bertog, President Bertog Landscape Company, joins us in the summer months. Bob, you ready to answer some questions?
Yeah, let's see what we got.
Okay, Producer Pete, who goes first here? We'll start with some phone calls. Carrie, you're on WGN. How can we help you, Carrie?
Hey, guys. I just put in some sod. I had it put in. It's not the full yard. just repair, but it's a pretty large, you know, piece of repair. And so, and obviously I've been watering it a lot. The question is, when can I walk on it? When can I mow it? When can I put on herbicide? What should I do in the future? And should I like oversee the patches to make it look nice in a little while, or what do I do?
I would first worry about getting what's there established. You can walk on it unless it's completely saturated. Depending on how you prepare it underneath, you should be able to walk on it now. As far as watering, when it's this hot, and I just put a new sod at my house, I'm watering it twice a day for an hour and a half each time.
Wow.
That's good enough.
And it should start to knit in about 5 to 7 days. Just give it a little tug, and if there's any type of resistance, then you'll know it's starting to knit. And then you can start tapering back on the watering, but I'd still water every day.
What about mowing it, Bob? What about mowing it?
Probably not going to mow it for 2 to 3 weeks. And then the herbicide, don't do any herbicide until after 3 or 4 mowings. So that's another 4 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So
that's good to know, because it borders up to some stuff that I'm trying to get some crabgrass and stuff. So cool. Okay, good to know.
Good to go. I'm glad you called, Carrie. I hope that helps. I think it does. Who's next? Let's see here. Michael, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Mike?
Yeah, hi, John and Bob. I have a mulch bed in my backyard that goes around our deck, and then the mulch bed is surrounded by bricks on the outside. And I just had a couple of guys come in, and they put down a whole new liner, and then they put down all new mulch, and the weeds are still coming up through the liner. Is there anything that you recommend that I can do to try to mitigate those weeds other than breaking my back and leaning over for hours on end pulling weeds?
Tell me more about what this liner is that they put down.
I'm not sure what it is. The guy told me that, it's a weed barrier. You won't have any weeds. And that was, you know, 4 weeks ago when he put it down, and I'm still getting weeds coming through. So I was just wondering if there's a specific product or something that you recommend that I could try to kind of mitigate some of those weeds.
Well, if there's no desirable plants in the area, go ahead and just use a non-selective herbicide, and that'll knock them back. But I'd still get to the core of it and see why are the weeds popping through a weed barrier? Like, it wasn't installed correctly, maybe. If they didn't overlap the seams, the weeds will find their way through the smallest cracks. So, you know, I'd work on that, because getting rid of the weeds is pretty easy with a herbicide.
Well, the barrier they put down in my yard in the back, I don't like it. Whenever I find it, I'm pulling it up. It's just like this tarp of plastic, just a plain old sheet of plastic, Bob.
Yeah, it's like a fabric. It's like a fabric, almost like a screen.
Oh, yeah. Well,
right.
I've seen that,
the
too.
The plastic one is bad, because that doesn't let any water through.
Yes.
At least the fabric one, water can get through to the plants. So if it's put down correctly and they use a staple to anchor it in place, the weed should not go through it. Now, the other thing, too, is the kind of mulch that they put in. If it's not premium mulch, there could be a ton of weed seeds in that mulch, which the weeds would pull up really easily if they did germinate. So you got to do a little more investigating on this one. But a herbicide is going to save you some back pain.
Yeah, but you don't want to put down a non-select, because then it's going to kill everything, right?
Well, that's why I said I'm not sure if there's any other vegetation in the bed. If it's an open bed, you could just use a non-selective, that's fine. Otherwise, you got to be real careful.
Well, what's the mix of grass to weeds you got there, Michael?
There's a couple bushes there, but I mean, if those bushes were to die tomorrow, I mean, I wouldn't care. I don't have a green thumb by any stretch of the imagination. So, I mean, I would almost, if it were up to me, I would have nothing in my yard but grass, and I would just do it that way. I hate having to tend to my yard. It is not relaxing for me. I know some people love it. I absolutely hate it, and the fact that these weeds are coming up through this weed barrier is really irritating for me.
Yeah,
I'd be making some phone calls back to the guy who did the work.
Yeah, well, good luck to you on that. It's funny. Isn't it funny, Bob, because to me that is my best day is mowing the lawn, raking the leaves, pulling the weeds. I positively love doing that. But maybe that's because I sit in an air-conditioned building 5 days a week.
Well, I'm with you. I turned my shrubs last night, just put on the earbuds and just go to town and just relax.
Well, some of the bushes that we've had planted in the front of our yard are getting ungainly, but I don't want to sort of trim them back now that it's this, you know, the height of the growth season, but they don't look as manicured as I'd like them to. What's your advice for me on that, Bob?
You should be trimming them now. The spring flush is done. They're not going to get much more unruly. So go ahead and prune them now. If you wait much longer, anything that flowers next spring is going to harden off pretty quickly here, and then you're going to be cutting off the buds for next year. So get them to the height that you want them, and go ahead and prune them. Now's the time to do it.
And the buds will yet come for next season, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
If you wait too long, the buds will set, and then you're too late.
Bob, my old Honda mower cuts only 3 1/4 inches at the highest. What's the best height to mow the grass? This guy wants it. He wants to have a taller blade of grass. What's ideal?
For the summer, 3 inches is perfect. So if they can go up to 3 1/4, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's much higher than that, the grass is just going to flop over. You don't want that.
Hey, Bob, my marigold leaves are turning white. Why would they be turning white, Bob?
It's probably powdery mildew, which is just a fungus that's in the air. It does nothing to affect the plant. It's very unpleasing aesthetically. It just looks like you have baby powder on all your marigolds.
And
it's powdery mildew.
It's not going to kill it, Bob?
No.
You know, although it's still not as nice to look at. Bob, hydrangeas that started out blue are now mostly green. Can I change the color black back to blue?
Not this season, no. They've done their show of blue, and now they're hardening off. It's hard to believe it's already almost the middle of July, but some of the hydrangeas are starting to harden off for the season. The flowers have turned like a lime green, and then that's it for the season. They'll stay lime green through the rest of the year, but now you're starting to see your panicle hydrangeas come to life, and those should start flowering by the end of July, and then they'll flower through August.
317 go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to say, you want to have a variety. This way you have a variety of different plants. They flower at different times of the season.
Oh, yeah, right. How much topsoil can I add to the existing lawn without killing the existing grass? I want to level some low spots.
I would wait until fall to do that. If you do that now with the heat, you're just going to bake that grass that's underneath there, and the existing turf won't peek through the topsoil that you put on top. So I would wait.
Then what?
Then in the fall, go ahead and you can put it down and level it out, and you won't harm the grass.
Yeah, but I mean, if you put too much, you're going to bury it, and it won't get through. Like, is there a measurement amount that you would say, Bob?
Well, there's a process called lawn leveling, which actually you can put down a pretty significant amount if you're trying to fill some of these ruts. Like, if you put down an inch, the grass will still grow through it.
An inch.
Not now, if you wait till fall.
Yeah, right. But even then, an inch might not be enough. That maybe it's going to be 2 seasons for you to do this. You'd say an inch, not much more than an inch, right?
Correct. But you'd be surprised how much it will level it out. But yeah. I agree with you. It's an ongoing process. Because remember, especially in Chicago with the freeze-thaw cycles that we have, it's constantly moving the soil. So any rocks or anything that's underneath or clay that doesn't move as much, that's how you're creating these pockets that give you the bumpy feeling when you're walking on your lawn.
And don't you say there's a blend, like you want sand and peat and dirt or soil? What's the blend that you put down when you do that, Bob?
Topsoil, compost, and sand.
Topsoil, compost, sand. What's the ratio on those?
Topsoil, let's say 75%.
Yeah.
Compost, 15, and then 5% sand.
No, then you're not to 100. 75, you carry the 1.
Oh, yeah, I was over by 1. So to cut back on the sand a little bit.
So 10% sand, 15% compost, 75% topsoil.
There you go. See, I can't do the math that fast.
312-981-7200. Ha! Bob needs my help. All right, let's talk to Diane. You're on WGN. Diane, what can we do for you?
Hi. So I have a problem with pests in my landscaping. It started last year, and I treated it with spraying with neem oil. We even did like a spectacide. And then this year, it's like an infestation. I had every kind of garden pest that you can imagine. I couldn't go around the yard anymore doing it myself. So I hired a like an exterminator, and they've been here twice now, and I still have them.
What kind of garden did you say this is, Diane? What are you growing?
It's my backyard. It's plants and flowers.
I see, not vegetables. Okay, Bobby, what are your thoughts about this?
It sounds like you might just not be putting down the insecticide either at the right time or at the right rate. They usually give you a range of rate, like let's say, you know, 1 pound per thousand. I'm just making these numbers up, so don't. I'm 1 pound to 3 pounds per thousand square feet, and the people might be putting down 1 pound because obviously they can make more money because they're not using as much product. So make sure you're putting it down at the maximum rate that the label says, and also make sure that the insecticide that you're putting down is labeled for what's in the area, what's populated the area. So because there could be some insects that they can laugh at what you're putting down. They might not be targeted for that pest. So do a little more homework. Make sure
what
you're getting labeled.
Some of them are.
Like what?
I know. Well, like I've identified a woolly aphid. And then the other ones, I don't know if it's a white flies, but like you'll spray the plant and like all these little tiny things will come flying up.
Oh, I've seen that.
They suck all of the stuff out of the leaves.
Okay. I thought you were talking about pests that were in the soil underneath, but if it's aphids and woolly aphids and white flies like that, you want to use a systemic insecticide. Not a contact, because in order for a contact insecticide to work, you actually have to hit the insect. If you use a systemic, it means that the plant will take the insecticide up through its vascular system, then when the insects start to feed, they'll ingest the insecticide and die.
So you're going to put something in the soil that the plant is going to take in. You don't have to worry about hitting the bugs. You're going to put something in the earth that the plant will take in, and that's how it's going to repel them, right, Bob?
Right. It's a systemic plant, and there are some systemic, depending on the type of plant, there are some systemic insecticides that the leaf will take up the insecticide, and it's the same thing. It translocates through the plant.
Yeah.
So then the same thing. The insect starts sucking on the leaves, and then that's what kills the insects.
Oh, I got it. Okay. Well, Diane, I hope that helps, but tell the guy that's doing this or the people at the hardware store you want a systemic insecticide for the woolly mammoths and whatever else you have there. That's Bob Bertog. He's the president of the Bert. And by the way, if you have a problem with woolly mammoths in your yard, they are almost...
it's a big problem.
Oh, my God. Bob, it's always nice to talk to you. I hope you can help us again next week.
I will be here. Thanks, John. Have a great week.